Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hi there, welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast. This week I have a follow-up interview with Lynn Ulbrich, the mother of Ross Ulbrich, who is in prison for life for his role in the creation of the Silk Road website. If you're new to my podcast and have not heard my previous interview with Lynn, then I suggest you check it out before you listen to this one, as it covers a number of the complexities and issues around the case. And I will share a link for that interview in the show notes. At the time of our first interview, the family and Ross were waiting on their petition to the Supreme Court to have their case reviewed, which was their final option within the courts. Sadly, the Supreme Court have declined their petition and they are now down to the only option, which is a presidential pardon, which there is a petition for currently out on change.org. This interview was also important for me personally. I've talked before about how I used a similar website to buy a treatment for my mother, which is unavailable in the UK when she was dying from cancer. And I feel like Ross paved the way for that to happen. And it's something I'm personally grateful for. But also, the closer I've got to the case and the more I've read about the case, the more I feel that it's an injustice that somebody is going to be spending the rest of their life in prison for what is essentially a non-violent crime. Also, I can really feel Lynn's pain as a mother losing her son to the prison system. She often talks about grief almost like a death, and I can feel and I can witness her pain, and I feel a lot of empathy for her. And in the short amount of time I've got to know her, I can see how difficult it has been for her. I've also kept very close to the case, and I have witnessed firsthand the spread of information online, especially relating to the murder-for-hire charge, which has now been dropped, but has misrepresented who Ross is as a person. So I've often found myself arguing or debating with people or encouraging them to at least research the facts of the case so they understand what the difference between something which is an allegation and something which somebody is prosecuted for. Also, I've noticed with Lynn how this has become more important than just Ross. Whilst she is desperate to have her son home, she is now a campaigner for a better prison system, which now locks up so many people for non-violent crimes and tears families apart and sends people all around the country, many states or miles away from where their family are. She has firsthand witnessed the upset it causes to family, children being torn away from their parents, and there must be a better way. So it's been really interesting to watch and witness what Lynn is going through here as well, the wider journey she is on. This week, I don't want you to support the show. Usually I ask you to support the show, but actually, if you do not agree with the sentence that Ross has received, if you don't believe he should spend the rest of his life in prison, I would encourage you to support the campaign. And there's a few things which you can do which are really helpful. Firstly, you can sign the petition. It currently has around 38,000 signatures. Lynn's target is 500,000. Previous cases of clemency have had similar results. So if you want to find that, you just have to search on Google for Ross Ulbrich change.org petition. I'll share it out in the show notes as well. You can share and promote the petition, encourage other people to review the facts of the case, and encourage other people to sign it and help with their campaign. You can educate yourself on the case at the Free Ross website, which is freeross.org, which has a full history of the prosecution in the case and some of the injustices around it. You can follow the campaign on social media and share out important content. There is a Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook page. I know the Twitter is twitter.com/free_Ross. Again, I will share all links out in the show notes. You can make a donation to the campaign on the freeross.org website. You can follow Ross himself on Twitter. He's there himself now, and he has, whilst he doesn't have internet access, somebody brings him copies of the messages which are left for him. So you can follow Ross on twitter.com/realrossu, and then you can share this interview out on social media. As I said, everything included in this interview and all the important links will be in the show notes, which are on which accompany the podcast and also on my website. Okay, so on to the interview. Please take your time and have a listen to it. And if you do have concerns, I do encourage you to go and read the facts of the case. And then if you have any questions, you can feel free to email me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com, and I would love to hear from you. And if I can help answer any of your questions, then I will do my best. Okay, I hope you enjoy the interview. Hi, Lynn. Nice to see you again after this time. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. I'm very heartened by the great support we've gotten for Ross's clemency petition. So that's been a real boost after being denied by the Supreme Court, which was quite devastating. So this whole thing has been a real roller coaster. And, you know, just riding the roller coaster and clinging onto it as best I can.
And how's Ross doing?
I'd say pretty much the same. You know, it's challenging, but he's, you know, Ross is just amazing because he just stays positive. He really does. He's always fun to be with. He's never, I don't know, he never complains. He's just always keeps going day to day in the most positive way possible. He started tweeting, so he's happy about that because he's been basically muzzled up until now because of the court process. It's just advisable not to speak at all. And he is going to be tweeting. He has been. And mainly just about who he is. He feels like he has been so misrepresented in the media and really by the courts. And it's just not who he is, which has been one of the hardest things for me because I'm like, this is not my son. I know him. And 100 other people who know him wrote that. And those letters are on our website, freeruss.org. And so now he's just like, look, I'm just, you know, a down-to-earth, nice guy, basically. He's going to be just tweeting about his life, not so much about his case and everything, but you know, his day-to-day thoughts.
And he's not allowed internet access, right?
No.
So mm-hmm. does he tweet via you and he tells you what he wants to say, you take it away and then you take back?
Not me, a friend.
Okay.
Yeah, he's not doing it with me.
Okay, yeah. Well, he's catching you up on followers.
I know when he started, he goes, look, this is just going to, you know, like Twitter accounts take a long time to get followers. I'm like, I don't think so, you know, but he hasn't been on the internet in almost 5 years and he wasn't really on social media before that much. So he really has no idea what he's doing, but okay, you know, and, but you know, so it's going to be very simple. You know, he just wants to communicate. He really wants to communicate to people who he is and what he's thinking.
And how's your husband? How's he at the moment?
He's like us, you know, hanging in there. It's been tough on our family. I won't deny it. It's been very hard. But he's, you know, working and, you know, earning a living to keep us supported. And well, I pretty much devote full time to this. And, you know, he just recently, you know, spent some time with Ross. It was really good. Our business is in Costa Rica, so we're kind of stretched that way.
Yeah.
But Mm-hmm.
So the main things since we last spoke that I wanted to talk to you about is there's obviously the dropping of the murder for hire charges, which was obviously great news, losing the appeal to the Supreme Court, the petition you have now out now, and also the support you've received from the Libertarian Party. But before we go into those things, there will be some people who haven't listened to the original interview, so I don't want to cover everything from that, but I'd like to cover some of it. But can you update me on where you are in the legal process and what there is, what avenues you have left now for Ross?
Very few. We're really, our options for direct appeal to the courts are over with the denial of the Supreme Court. There is a very long shot motion you can file within a year called a 2255 that says, you know, it can bring up different things, newly discovered evidence, ineffective assistance of counsel at like a trial, various things that, you know, maybe misconduct of a judge, different things that could be presented to the court. And then they can decide if it would have changed the outcome of the trial. And if they think it does, they'll give you a new trial. Very rarely granted. Very rarely granted. Of course, we have to try for everything. But, you know, it's rarely granted. I think we have some good arguments. I do. But we've been shot down so many times in the courts that we're going to go for it. But I think, honestly, and it's another very difficult thing to achieve, but I think clemency, a commutation of Ross's sentence, is feasible. It's such an outrageous sentence. It's such a draconian, brutal sentence that even if he were guilty of all the charges, which I don't believe, it's just out of the, it's just wrong. And so I think there might be a chance for clemency. I hope and pray there is.
He's received quite a lot of support from key people and key leaders in the crypto and Bitcoin community, which my podcast is obviously based. Charlie Lee from Litecoin, Roger Ver, obviously we've spoken about Roger, Eric Voorhees. Is he aware that he has such wide backing?
I haven't seen Ross since, I mean, he knows that Eric is a supporter because Eric visited him and they got along great. He really likes him. They liked each other. So, I haven't had a chance to tell him about Charlie Lee, which we're very grateful for his support. Cause he's, you know, it means a lot. And, I will be seeing Ross on Saturday and I'll be able to fill him in on everything.
Okay. So to help people, there will be some people, this will be the first time they've listened to this. Obviously my podcast has grown in reach since we last spoke. I will direct people to our original interview because I think it's important. Can you give your best summary of how we have got to where we are now in terms of what happened and what the key issues are and key questions are around Ross's conviction?
Sure. Ross is Ross was brought to court, arrested and brought to court based on his involvement in the Silk Road website. And that site was essentially a free market website that basically left it up to users what they would buy and sell on it. But there were restrictions because it was based on a philosophy of voluntary interaction and do no harm, no use of force. So things were prohibited, such as child pornography. There was no child pornography. There was no stolen property. There were no weapons except for a very brief time, and then they were taken off. Was no fraud, you know, fraudulent things were allowed. They were taken off. It was not highly regulated, but if it was seen, it was removed and prohibited in the rules. So, but drugs were allowed. Mostly what was, and most commonly what was exchanged were small quantities, user quantities of cannabis. By far the most common thing that was exchanged. But that's because the philosophy is like, well, if it's something you choose to do, you want to do, and you're not hurting somebody else, it's okay. It's just if you hurt somebody else. So anyway, that was the philosophy, and it was the whole idea behind it was the privacy involved and a free market, a truly free market where people could just decide what to do. And it was and they used Bitcoin, which was very little known at the time, to make these exchanges. So that's the site. And I'm not defending the site because I think there are things on there, but I wouldn't, you know, there's things on lots of sites that are, I wouldn't defend, but you know, there's things, worse things on Silk Road. I'm not defending the site. However, that was the intention behind it. No harm was intended, I do believe. So anyway, Ross was arrested, put in solitary confinement. At that time, another Dread Pirate Roberts logged into the Silk Road account, forum account, and Dread Pirate Roberts being the handle of whoever was running it. And I think it's pretty obvious many people were. Also, when he was in solitary, tampered evidence was discovered, but it was too late for trial. In any case, went to trial, and there were many issues at trial that you can see listed on freeross.org, including blocked cross-examination, blocked defense witnesses. The judge coached the prosecution. She didn't allow testimony that pointed to an alternate perpetrator. There's a lot of things about the trial that were wrong, in my opinion. And Ross was convicted of all counts. One of the counts was the kingpin charge, which is usually reserved for violent leaders of cartels who are responsible for multiple murders and assassinations, usually they're not into voluntary interaction. Cartel leaders generally do not ascribe to the philosophy of use no force, voluntary interaction. But it was basically used as leverage against him to pressure him to agree to plead guilty. And then, but even so, it wasn't really a plea deal because the prosecutor said he'd recommend life anyway. So, you know, it's kind of like, okay, I take my chances at trial. In any case, he was convicted. And then the judge, Judge Forrest, who is now retiring at the end of the year, sentenced him, and at sentencing brought in uncharged allegations of, among other things, murder for hire, which was never charged by New York at trial. And just the only charge actually has been the prosecution has asked to drop just the other day. So it will be that there are no charges against Ross for this. And yet the prosecution used it to deny him bail. The judge used it to, you know, bolster this horrible sentence, justifying it with something that no jury ruled on. No jury, it wasn't proven. No jury said, we think he did this. Just the judge decided it was true. Now, this is we can go into, this leads into his Supreme Court petition. But in any case, he was sentenced to double life plus 40 years. Without parole, there's no parole in the federal system. All nonviolent charges, first-time offender, for something that he created when he was 26 years old. You know, it's outrageous.
And the Drug Policy Alliance have actually come out and said that the website actually was a better situation and a better place for people to buy their drugs, as we're in a situation where prohibition doesn't work. It was a safer, non-violent way and reduced crime and harm. That's correct, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, they and Leap and there are several academic papers that say this. And that was drugs were not necessarily the, from what I understand, not the intention of creating the site wasn't to sell drugs, but of course people gravitated towards it because of its anonymity and privacy. And it did turn out to be, according to all these people, experts, which the judge just brushed aside, a safer place. They even had a doctor that consulted with people, sometimes tried to get people to give up drugs or tried to help them through things. It was more of a community, from what I understand. I wasn't ever on it, but a community of people who were, there was a book club there, you know, I don't think too many kingpins have, you know, book clubs on a website. There was a book club, there was this doctor and consulting, there was a forum where people exchanged ideas. And again, I think there were things there that were people, it was, you know, I don't support, but at the same time, the way it was painted at trial and in the media is so distorted and, inaccurate. And I think in the case of the trial and potentially maybe the media, but certainly the trial, it was meant to prejudice the jury. Like marijuana was barely mentioned when they talked about the drugs sold. They didn't, I think it was mentioned once in passing, you know, but that was the main thing that was sold was small amounts of marijuana. And they didn't mention the legal things that were sold or the non-drug items that were sold. Only drugs were mentioned. So it really painted a distorted picture to the jury.
And when we met last time, we met prior to the Supreme Court ruling. So obviously there was a lot of hope. There was a lot riding on that. And now you've obviously it's failed. I know you're not going to give up the fight. It's very clear, and a lot of people are behind you. But at the same time, have you and have Ross had the conversation that and discussed that he might never now leave prison? Has he had a change of mindset or an acceptance that is a very distinct possibility now?
Well, it goes without saying. We know it's a distinct possibility. We haven't really talked, you know, I haven't said, you realize, Ross, this is, you know, no, I mean, we know it is, but we're hopeful. We haven't given up hope. Ross himself said, where there's life, there's hope. Things change. You know, I just can't leave him there to die in this place. It's just so wrong. It's so unacceptable to me. I can't accept it, the idea. And I can't go on and live a fulfilling life knowing that that's where he is. I just can't. So as long as I, you know, can keep going, I will. And you know, he feels the same. I mean, he'll make the best of it while he's there, and I'll make the best of the situation. So will our family, but we can't just desert Ross. And actually, when he was first arrested and my first visit with him behind glass, it's not now. I just said to him, I will never desert you, Ross. And I keep my word. I'm the kind of person who does. So I'm not going to ever do that. And he's my kid. You know, I can't. So, but yes, it was very disappointing. And not only for us, it was a big blow. And actually, Foundation for Economic Education just wrote an article about how it's essentially denying the Fourth Amendment, the decision fee. You know, they just wrote an article about it because... do you want me to go into what the petition was and what was denied?
We can do. Was that the article written by Lindsay Marie?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, essentially nullified the Fourth Amendment.
Fourth Amendment. And let me explain a little bit. I don't have to get into all the weeds, but there were two questions before the Supreme Court, and both of them are very important questions for all of us. One was this Fourth Amendment question. And what it was that the question was, does the government need to get a warrant before they can search and seize and delve into all of our internet browsing history, all of our internet habits, which reveal a lot of personal information, you know, medical records, political interests, sexual orientation, religious orientation, all kinds of things, apps. And they don't need a warrant to get into all that. And they can have no oversight. They can do it secretly. Nobody knows. They can use this against people. You know, even if you personally have nothing to hide, it's very concerning that the government can blackmail, for instance, high-level people like congressmen, judges, with maybe things on the internet that those people don't want the public to know, for example. They can use it to persecute people who they are part of a political group they don't like. I mean, it's a very slippery slope. All the petition was saying was get a warrant as per the Fourth Amendment so that it's in the open. So that, you know, it's been stamped by a judge, which is, you know, I don't think they turn down the government's warrants very often. When they did not turn down Ross's petition initially, it looked like they were, and actually even the Solicitor General recommended that it be held pending another case, Carpenter versus U.S., which they had accepted. And Carpenter basically says the government has to get a warrant to track us with our cell phones, that they can't just go into all of our cell phone information without a warrant. That was, they affirmed that. So once we thought they were holding Ross's case pending Carpenter, and then they affirmed Carpenter, it was very hopeful. The problem was that Chief Justice Roberts, the way he wrote the opinion was extremely narrow. So he'd said, this is just for this case. This is just for cell phones. Even though a laptop and a cell phone are basically both computers, he kept it just as cell phones and left out all of our internet things for another day. All of our internet history is not protected. It's open season, still, legally. And so they just kind of kicked the can down the road on that one and denied Ross's appeal. We were surprised. Our attorneys, who are extremely good and extremely experienced with the Supreme Court, they were surprised. And so that's that one.
Yeah, I mean, that was very strange as well, because they did wait for the decision on the Carpenter versus the United States.
That's right.
and then chose to ignore it. Exactly. And I think I read that it was solidifies the feeling that American freedoms are illusionary.
Well, it's hard not to think that. The way I think our government's being hijacked, our principles, our founding principles have been hijacked. From what I see and how things operate, it's just very, very alarming. The other question, which is an important question, which I think they just denied, you know, behind the scenes, and is the Sixth Amendment question of whether a judge without a jury can use an uncharged allegation to sentence somebody to life. And, you know, this has been going on, and that's what Judge Forrest did. She used allegations of murder for hire. Now all charges have been dropped to give Ross life. And that's why the founders wrote the Sixth Amendment, was to protect the accused from judges just on their own deciding that something is true without the ruling of a 12 jury members, supposedly of your peers, who will say, no, wait a minute, we don't think so. A judge is not supposed to be able to just say, oh, I think that's true and that's true and that's true. Never mind going to a jury. This is important. This is our Sixth Amendment protection. And it's been going on in the courts, apparently, I didn't realize this, for decades and decades. And it comes up, you know, people are sitting in prison, even when they've been acquitted by a jury, because a judge overrides it, or haven't been charged, like Ross, because a judge decides that that's right. This is, again, a very important protection that we have that's been, the precedent now is, continues to be, that the judiciary can ignore the Constitution, basically.
So we'll deal with both the Fourth and the Sixth separately, because obviously I've been reading about both. And this might be a challenging question on the Fourth one. I've always been honest with you. But
yeah,
having a surveillance state is obviously an awful thing, that your cell phone or internet access can be monitored without a warrant signed from a judge, but it doesn't actually change the crime that's committed. And I wondered with that one, whether in an alternate scenario that maybe a crime had been committed on yourself and the same, used similar evidence without a warrant, how you would maybe feel. This doesn't change my opinions on Ross or anything, but I felt closer to, I think I have much bigger problems with the Sixth Amendment than the Fourth, because whilst the Fourth feels unconstitutional, it doesn't change the crime. Do you understand my point?
Yes, I do. And by the way, it wasn't just as an aside, it wasn't just his internet. They had a directional antenna aimed at his home without a warrant. They can be outside my house right now watching everything I do in my house without a warrant based on this case. The thing is, the Supreme, and I understand what your point is, and actually I feel kind of, the Sixth Amendment to me is easily as important because it's so unjust. It's kind of like framing someone. the Supreme Court does not get into whether you're innocent or guilty. By the time it gets to the Supreme Court, they are ruling on wide-ranging, broad-reaching principles that will affect everybody. The bit about, you know, does it affect the crime, that's more district court and maybe appellate, but you're not at that point arguing an individual case so much as using the case to bring constitutional questions to their attention. And so that's why, there's other arguments about Ross's innocence or the crime or any, but that's not what the Supreme Court is interested in. So Carpenter may be guilty too.
Yeah.
Carpenter might be robbing Radio Shacks, but that's right. Not the point. The rest of us. And, you know, there's this attitude of, or this basically principle of, it's better for one guilty person to go free than have all of our rights taken, you know, jeopardized, basically.
Right, okay.
So it's not about the case specifically.
No, I understand. And there are obviously constitutional issues there, and it's quite scary. But I always felt there was a lot more strength in the Sixth Amendment because, and especially now, you know, you released last week.
Yeah, I know.
Especially the timing now. Right? And, or, yep. You know, I read...
Interesting timing, don't you think? Interesting timing. They hold on to it for 5 years, and now, oh, never mind.
Yeah, I mean, I read that, was it the attorney for the District of Maryland has moved to dismiss the prejudice, the indictment, right? And it happens so close to after the Supreme Court ruling, yet I remember reading everything that Judge Forrest had said in court relating to the murder for hire. It was spoken as if the crime had been committed. And firstly, I'm suspicious about the timing of why it's happened, but I'm wondering if the charges had been dropped prior to the Supreme Court reviewing the case, would that have affected it?
Mm-hmm. I think it might have affected the appellate court decision for sure, because they took it as fact as well. But they said it, the murder for hire definitely affected the sentence. They said that. The Supreme Court, I'm not sure, but they are human beings. I'm sure they're familiar with the case. And I don't know. You know, you just don't know. But we had tried to say to Maryland, look, you know, either take this to trial. He has a right to a speedy trial or drop it. But they kept it, poisoning the whole thing, you know, I mean, for almost 5 years. I mean, this is an indictment that's been there for almost 5 years, unprosecuted, doing nothing with it. And you wonder about all that.
I don't see it as a coincidence. And I still struggle with the role of Judge Forrest in the case and the hypocrisy of what happened with Blake Benthall with Silk Road 2, who spent 13 days in prison. So Ross was sentenced as a lesson to anyone thinking of creating a dark web marketplace to scare
them. Yeah, which didn't work. After her sentence, they were proliferated even more rapidly. There's a couple of things about Judge Forrest that just came out that are on the record. That a couple of things she did. First of all, what most people don't know. First of all, prior to trial, she anonymized the jury, which means that the jury were told, "Don't give your name, and we won't give your name, and you'll be kept protected as if Ross was dangerous." But she did it secretly. There's a process for that, where you have to justify doing it. You have to explain to the jury, you know, the situation. It needs to be public. She didn't do it publicly. She prejudiced the jury before trial by doing that secretly. We brought it to the court after, you know, fairly recently, and they don't seem to be worried about it. The other thing was, and then also she coached the prosecution. She coached them, and there's, you know, hey, that wasn't really clear what you said. You might want to go ahead and rephrase that. She helped them with their communication to the jury. And there's other things she did. But, the woman was recommended by Chuck Schumer for her position on the bench.
Right.
You know, Chuck Schumer was the force behind this whole thing. Preet Bharara, his good buddy, he was his special counsel for almost 5 years, and then Schumer recommended him to be lead prosecutor in New York. Very powerful position. You know, they're all friends. And somehow it really seemed like Ross didn't have a chance against this group. You know, why was he brought to New York for his trial? He was arrested in California. He has no connection to New York whatsoever. You know, it just really feels orchestrated. From me, this is my opinion. You know, I don't have proof.
Lynn, you're not alone in those feelings, and I've had many a heated debate or a debate on Twitter. Some people not fully understanding what's happened in the case. I don't think people understand that cross-examination by the defense was repeatedly blocked.
That's right.
So-called ODs that were attributed to the Silk Road weren't properly investigated in their false toxicology reports. I don't think people understand all that. And often, the most common counter-argument I've seen when I've put up my own defense or I've seen other people put up defenses for Ross is they always come back with, yeah, but he had to try to have six people killed. Have you not seen the transcripts? To which I always say he's not been convicted of this or prosecuted for this, and there's a reason. What are the misconceptions around the murder for hire charges, and what do people not understand?
Well, one thing about have you not seen the transcripts, or you know, is that the charge in Maryland was based on the evidence provided by Karl Mark Force, a corrupt agent now in prison. We're supposed to believe him. Secondly, I looked at that chat and I'm like, wow, this is not Ross writing this. He types like a techie. He's like, there's all these nice capital letters and punctuation. I'm like, I have never seen Ross write anything to me in an email or anything else that looks like this. There's not a capital letter in sight. Okay. And it just seemed real phony to me. But that, you know, again, anecdotal, but why didn't they charge him with it? That's the question. You know, they talk about it, they use it, but funny, they never brought forth real evidence to the jury and asked them to rule on it. This is not because they're nice. It's not because they don't pile on as many things as they possibly can. They put in fake IDs gave them 5 years for fake IDs. You know, I mean, they will find anything they can to pile onto people. They didn't charge him with murder for hire. And that's what our system's based on. You're not supposed to just assume the government's telling you the truth and not presenting a, you know, their narrative without, that's why we have juries. That's why we have trials, you know, and people are like, well, it must be true. The media and the government say so. This is a really dangerous mindset. You know, it's like, oh, okay. So we'll just believe everything the media and the government says and no problem.
And there's a lot of suspicion or allegations that the wider case here was actually work being done by the NSA looking into Bitcoin transactions and the reach of the NSA.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's experts, Robert Graham, Nicholas Weaver, who looked at, for instance, the FBI agent Christopher Tarbell, who was the lead investigator. His explanation of how he found the Silk Road server was they were like, this is gibberish. Graham said, this is a lie. There's no way. It's impossible. And, it's like, so here we have a federal agent probably lying under oath about his investigation. And his response was, oh, darn, I didn't save my work. The dog ate my evidence kind of thing. And I'm like, really? You didn't save your work? You don't have a backup of the most important case you've ever been involved in? Okay, I'm supposed to believe that. So they said, just trust us. This is how we found it. And I'm like, once again, do you just take the government's word? Also, it's true that recently, this past March, it was brought publicized by The Intercept, based on Edward Snowden's, papers, and memos that the NSA was tracking Bitcoin users a few months before Ross was arrested. Not terrorists, mind you, not a lot of things. Bitcoin users, which if they're Americans, this is illegal. And I would bet $1 million if I had it, that they were tracking Silk Road at the time, because that was the only marketplace basically for Bitcoin. So where else are they going to track the Bitcoin users but Silk Road? Which, you know, and then you get into who were they. So I think and Edward Snowden himself said it's unthinkable that the NSA was not involved in Ross's case. He said this publicly. So I'm like, of course they were. And this is illegal. This is very alarming. And so then what they do is, you know, you probably know all about it, is parallel construction, which is basically evidence laundering. It's evidence laundering, okay? You take the evidence illegally procured by the NSA, they provide it to the DEA or whatever law enforcement, and then they make up a story to explain how they got it. And I believe this was done in several instances in Ross's investigation. We are about to finish a case history, extensive case history, with over 350 footnotes documenting, based on public things, not our opinion, what transpired. And one of them, it presents a pretty clear picture that I think there's a little parallel construction going on here. Again, a threat to us. Again, a precedent that is very dangerous. And, you know, you can't live in a surveillance state and be free. It's antithetical. You can't do it.
Yeah. All the evidence and everything that happened is obviously, it's really frustrating. I've read a lot, and it's also very confusing. And sadly, we now are in this position now where the Supreme Court ruling, you know, they've ruled that there won't be a rehearing of the trial. So therefore, you've moved on to the petition.
Correct. The clemency.
Some 34,000 signatures so far, which is growing quickly, which is pretty amazing.
And that's in less than 2 weeks. I mean, when was it? Let's see. Yeah, that's like a week and a half.
What is the process on the petition? What happens with the petition?
You know, I think now what happens with trying to have clemency, we are hiring a pardon attorney, an expert, you know, because we need that. She will know the process, but basically there's a formal process. I see the petition as almost like a public relations vehicle to show support, to show that this is important, to show that this is not just some random drug case, that this is bigger than that, and that it deserves attention at the presidential level. And so whether a petition influences a presidential decision regarding clemency, I don't know. But I don't see how it can hurt. And I do know that of two people right off the bat who have been pardoned, and they had petitions. Tim Tyler, who horribly was arrested, given life sentence based on, because it was his third strike, thank you, Bill Clinton, for drugs at 23 years old, selling LSD at a Grateful Dead concert. Not a schoolyard, mind you, a Grateful Dead concert. He got life. So, of course, and 25 years later, thank God, President Obama pardoned him. He had a petition. It was over 400,000 signatures. And I believe that helped the attention of President Obama. So I feel like, of course, we have to have a petition where people can at least say, I don't like this sentence. I disagree. Things are wrong here, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, all we can do is try. Like I said, we're not leaving any stones unturned. We can't.
What are there other examples of clemency that have given you hope that you've, outside of that case?
Recently, Alice Johnson, you know, Alice Johnson had, President Trump recently pardoned. I believe he commuted her sentence. There's a difference. A pardon is full exoneration. It's not on your record. Everything's gone. A commutation of a sentence is normally given if you're still in prison. So that's really our goal with Ross, is a commutation of his sentence. So it doesn't have to address whether or not what you did was wrong or right, or you're guilty, or it's just basically the sentence is wrong. And I think most reasonable people can agree that Ross is, not everyone, but that is way over the top. So Alice Johnson was a 62-year-old grandmother. You know, we were paying a lot of money to keep Alice Johnson, keep us protected from the 62-year-old grandmother who 22 years ago made a mistake got involved in drugs. And because of Kim Kardashian brought it to President Trump's attention, and he chose to pardon her, give her commute her sentence, which is great. And that's an example. And she had a petition of over 200,000 signatures.
Right. Okay.
There are many petitions. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we need to work to get that higher. And I believe the cost to the U.S. government is around $2 million a year to keep Ross in prison?
Yeah, if he lives a full, it's about, I think it's $35,000 a year. I call it the most evil and expensive hotel in the world. It's costing a fortune. It's cost over, the drug war itself has cost Americans over $1 trillion with a T dollars in over 45 years. And people are still using drugs. It has accomplished nothing except expanding government power, trashing the Constitution, and making them a ton of money. That's what the drug war accomplishes.
And imprisons many nonviolent criminals.
Imprisons what? I'm sorry.
Many nonviolent people. Is it 55% of people in prison are for nonviolent crimes?
It's over 60.
It's over 60.
What I've read. I mean, there's different. Yes, Ross himself knows, people in there, a friend of his in there is doing life for marijuana. Marijuana. He's done 13 years for selling it. Granted, he was selling it. He's got a life sentence. And the prison happens to be in Colorado where it's legal. And here's this evil life sentence for this guy. And in fact, Ross is about to release today, I think, or sometime soon on his Twitter, I was told, a photo of him and some other people who are serving life for nonviolent offenses, a picture of them together asking for mercy, saying, we just want to go home. We don't want to hurt anybody. We don't want to do any more, make any more mistakes. We just want to go home.
Okay.
To our families, to our communities. And it's a very, very powerful picture. When you see it, you will see it. It's going to be, I think, today or this week, he's going to post it.
You do have the support of the Libertarian Party, right? Daryl Perry has
yes.
got behind you.
Oh, yeah. Daryl's a good friend and supporter, and he proposed that the party officially support pardon for Ross, and they did at conference. They officially moved unanimously, which is amazing because libertarians rarely do anything unanimously, be behind a pardon, a presidential pardon for Ross. I was thrilled. It was great.
I think it was a quote whereby if President Trump doesn't accede to the resolution that we need to elect a libertarian president in 2020 to get this shit done.
Yeah.
Do they have any kind of relationship with Trump, and can they lobby him, or does it not work like that?
I don't know. I really don't know. They do. They are the third largest political party in the country. I would hope that would mean something, that they have officially endorsed a pardon for Ross or clemency. And, I don't know. I'm kind of starting to reach out to different groups, actually different organizations, for support on the petition and the clemency. I will keep you posted.
So
there may be people in the party who do. Yeah.
So what are the ways my audience, how can we help? And tell me any way we can help, and obviously I will share it out.
Thank you. You've been so great. I really appreciate it. I appreciate your being so knowledgeable about the case, because that's not always true of interviewers I'm always very impressed with interviewers who know so much about it and have bothered to really learn the truth about it. So really appreciate that. Shows top-notch professionalism. And but how to help? It's really now about changing the narrative. What is this really about? What it's about is a double life sentence plus 40 years for something a young, passionate libertarian, a young guy, when he's 26 years old, did. And they have the government to make him an example, like the head on the spike of a medieval castle. Oh, if you do what he did, this is where you'll be. It's exactly the same psychology, which doesn't work, apparently. to destroy him, to crush him, to put him in a cage for the rest of his life. I mean, as if the mandatory minimum was 20 years. That's long. That's a generation. That means that Ross would have emerged at around 50 years old. Having not been on the internet in 20 years, do you really think he would go out and create some kind of scary website? Who knows what's going to be happening in 20 years? It's absurd. But it's cruel. It's un-American. It's horrible. And if I could just say a little spiel about sentencing, because since the drug war, the mass incarceration in America has metastasized 800%. And a lot of this is because of excessive sentencing, where people are kept in for, and they make money off these people for so long. And life sentences have quintupled. And in five times as many life sentences for all kinds of nonviolent, there's 17,000 nonviolent offenders who are doing life in our system, according to the Sentencing Project. It's unbelievable. When I was growing up, you had to really be a mass murdering maniac to get life. And the prison population stayed at a fairly steady 180,000. Now it's, I think it's over 2 million. It's larger than 11 states in the United States. The prison population could be its own state that's larger than 11 states. I mean, it's just becoming, it's a humanitarian crisis and a national disgrace. It's horrible. So this petition and Ross's case is shining a light on this. And that's our intention. Because one of the things in the picture I told you about is all those guys are going to get petitions. We are going to promote all of them. All of these people should be commuted. And it's a way to push back at this encroaching, draconian police state that is actually happening. And so please share it. Share it, and it's about, so what is this really about? You can get into the weeds of Ross's case, and that's fine, but what is it really about? And so social media, please follow me, follow Ross, retweet it, Facebook, like our Free Ross community page. I do my best to keep up with all of this. Sometimes I do admit I lag behind, but Instagram, Free Ross Ulbricht, and also please share the petition. The more signatures, the more impactful that's going to be. And my personal goal is 500,000. It's a big goal, but I think we can do it. I think we can do it.
Definitely do it.
Yeah. And more would be great, but 500,000 would be pretty impressive. So that's, please share the petition. Please, just spread the word. That's my main goal. I want my son to come home. He's not going to hurt a fly. He never has. He doesn't ever intended harm to anyone. He may have made bad choices. Hey, have you? have we all? And I don't know. It depends on how you see it. But life, come on. This is a chance to, it's easy. It takes a minute. Sign the petition. Spread the word. That would be great. Thank you, Peter, for your help, for your being willing to do that. So, being so helpful.
It's not a problem. I told you before, it's been important to me because of what happened with, I told you about my mother.
Yes.
And it's important to me because it's right. And also the feedback I've had since I've done the interview, what's really telling is how many people have shared it and how many important leaders in crypto have shared it, and I'll do an interview and it will be forgotten about 3 months later. This one keeps getting shared. So it's very important, and I hope this new one will. The target's 500,000, which obviously I will mobilize who I can to help. But was quite interesting in what you just said then, whilst obviously it's very personal to you because he's your son and you want it home, it also sounds like you have been mobilized personally to deal with this as a wider issue about the prison system and the locking up of nonviolent criminals. And I know you do a lot of work is everything focused on Ross, or is this now becoming wider for you? Are you working on wider issues with the prison system?
Right. No, absolutely. It's been a wider for me for a while. And this photo that Ross is in and his friends is an example. We, you know, when you can't go to that prison or any prison and get to know the families, see the children sobbing when they're being dragged away from their father, and know that that person, I've been in the room with the guy for hours, you know, and he's fine. You know, I'm not, they're not violent. They don't let violent people into, you know, dangerous people into the visiting room. And I'm like, really? So is it, these sentences are just unbelievable. And not only are they hurt, the people in the cage, but their families and these children who statistically are more likely to end up right back in that prison again. It's a self-feeding monster that keeps going. And it's very, I just can't forget those people either. It's so definitely a wider cause. I mean, obviously Ross is the focal point, but I hope that focal point can shed light. You know, I've got a pretty big mouth. I'm going to talk about it. I want to network with other groups and have been with the, who are, and they have supported the petition, by the Supreme Court petition, which is also a petition, so it gets confusing, but the Supreme Court appeal, other groups who are against trying to change the situation in the criminal justice system, because it is a bigger problem. It's a huge problem, and it's evil. It's wrong. It's very, very wrong. So yes, it's a bigger cause for Ross too, both of us and our family. So, and it has been for a while, but this is, we're going to keep at it. Yeah.
And did I see right? He tweeted, because he had a visitor the other day and he was grateful for that. He said 98% of prisoners do not get visitors.
Yeah, no, it's so sad because, you know, they don't make it easy. Because we have an internet business that I can move around, not easy to move around, but I do it, to be near him, to give him that lifeline to the normal, quote unquote, normal world. Because otherwise it just becomes your world. But not everybody has that ability, okay? They have little kids in school, they own a house, they live all over the country. It's expensive. And sometimes they'll show up and, oh, sorry, they're on lockdown or something like that. But, and that's heartbreaking. But so these people, these guys often don't get visitors for ever or years and years, or it's the same inmates I see in the visiting room with a little bit of mix up, but basically a lot of the same faces every time, because they're the ones whose families can or do visit. And so they're just warehoused, forgotten people who, their families, you know, either have given up on them or are unable financially, or there's all kinds of things. But I mean, I met a mom. She hadn't seen her son in 3 years, you know, and she finally saved the money to come, you know, and it was great to see them, you know, together. But it had been 3 years. She would have come more, but he's so far away and they can't afford it. And that story is over and over and over again. It's so, yep. Ross gets visits, but a lot of those guys don't. Most of them.
And what is prison life like for him now? I mean, he's obviously been there for quite some time. Does he face any difficult or dangerous situations, or is he kept away from that? Has he got good friendship groups now? And what's kind of life like for him in prison? What's he keeping doing with his time?
Yeah. Well, it is a dangerous place. It's a maximum security prison with violent people and violent gangs. I mean, you know, it is a dangerous place. So you know, Ross has learned to be on the alert for things, to, you know, you're on the alert all the time because anything can happen. Anything can break out, a fight. There's been many stabbings since I've been visiting him, for example. He is a very likable, nice guy. And that works anywhere you are, including in a maximum security prison. So I think he's very well liked. He helps people out if they need to, and he just does it. You know, he's like, if they need something written or something like that, he's happy to help them. So he's well liked. and I think he's respected as well. And he does have people that he's, you know, better friends with, like anybody would. You know, you make your friends. Some of the people in the photo, the nonviolent lifers who are drug, you know, drug offenders who are, have life sentences, many of them are friends of his because, you know, they're kind of, they're nonviolent people. But he has been immersed in his case. He's been immersed in, you know, writing and in studying. Like he's was reading about artificial intelligence. He was reading about physics. He also meditates, tries to stay healthy, spends time outside. You know, he doesn't watch TV and he doesn't, of course, do drugs or any of that. So he tries to stay as constructive as he can. It's boring. You know, prison's very boring. And Ross is a very intelligent, educated guy. And, you know, frankly, there aren't a lot of people there that, you know, he can have, you know, a high level intellectual conversation with. No offense, you know, it's just the truth. Doesn't mean he's not happy to talk to people. But, you know, I think that he feels that lack. But there are some. And, you know, he's learned a lot. He's matured a lot. And that's the other thing about a life sentence. People change. You give somebody life, their entire life, for something they did in their 20s? Please. People change. Even violent people change. Never mind nonviolent people, you know, who, you know, did something reckless on the internet or whatever. It's like, really? So, but anyway, he makes the best of it. And it's been better than when he was in New York because he can go outside, he can look at the mountains when they're not on lockdown, that is, and, you know, watch the sunrise and, you know, and that helps. All these little things help. So
it's interesting. I interviewed a chap called Meir Mizrachi the other day who was in prison in Colombia for a disagreement with the Panama government. And this is I think he was probably a similar age to Ross when he was arrested. He was based in New York building a tech company, and he was put into a maximum security prison in Colombia, obviously very scary. And jeez. what he explained to me is that he came to appreciate very small things, little things, yep, which we take for granted. He came to appreciate certain things, certain food he would get, mm-hmm, very rarely. I guess, yes, it would be similar, true, for Ross. Yeah.
Absolutely. Like I'll say, you know, he's got a certain favorite chicken sandwich that's pretty good. You know, that kind of thing is, yeah, I got the, or, you know, they order food on the commissary. In fact, basically his diet is very much supplemented by his commissary account, which people can donate to if they like. It helps.
How do they do that?
But, on the donation page of freeross.org. It's through Western Union, so that's kind of unfortunate, but so there's a fee, but you can donate to his commissary that way. And, you know, he can buy different foods and they actually cook. You know, they'll make a, you know, like a taco bowl where they can get, you know, rice and beans and, you know, fish and cheese and different for the commissary. It's way better than the prison. I mean, it's not great, but it's not, yeah, we wouldn't order in a restaurant or something, but it's way better and more nutritious than often what they get served in the, what they call chow. So, but yeah, it's true. These little things. And actually I personally too have come to appreciate little things because, you know, the stress that I've been under and the grief and everything, it's been hard. And when there's a moment of happiness or joy or encouragement or something like that, I've learned to go, okay, I'm going to really relish this right now. And I think we all can learn from that. It's like life is really just made up of moments, right? And some of them are hard. Some of them are really wonderful. And we need to appreciate those, you know, and let ourselves be strengthened by them because this is a challenge. This is a very challenging thing. And it's definitely a marathon. It keeps going, you know. And so, yeah. So anyway, Ross has definitely learned that ability.
Okay, and so what's coming up for you next? What are the, what, you know, what's going to be happening next, and what should we keep an eye on?
Well, I mean, really, I'm working on trying, you know, if anyone has connections, political connections, please let me know. Any way that we can influence clemency through political channels. We're out of the judicial now, really. We're in the political. We're in a political realm now. And politics is done with connections. And so, we need them. So anyone who has those, please let me know. I'm going to continue to speak on these issues publicly. And again, not just for Ross, but for the whole thing. But of course, for Ross. And, do what I can to keep... I don't want Ross to be forgotten. To just be, well, that was old news. He's there rotting away. Who cares? I do not want Ross to be forgotten. And I want his case, I want him free, and I want the other nonviolent people free. And, like I said, even violent people over time, and there's a lot of people who are framed too, I believe. But I don't know. I think that there's room for certainly nonviolent people to be let out with an ankle bracelet, not cost the taxpayers a fortune, and be with their families, and maybe do restitution if the restitution is called for, and not be just warehoused at the taxpayer's great expense.
Well, all I can do is I can share this out with people and help you best I can. It was great to catch up with you again.
You too.
You look well. And
thank you.
I do.
That's a miracle in itself, right?
No, really? You look great. Is there any final things you want to leave, any final comments, any final requests before I close out the interview?
Well, just really sort of sum up, I really believe we as Americans, but also the world, is at a tipping point in history. I really do. I think that we have a choice here. It could go either way. I hope it's not too late to go towards freedom and innovation and, all of that is could happen that's great. Or towards more government intrusion and control. And that is the tendency of government. So we have to decide. It's up to us. And Ross's case is one case where this is being, this is an issue. But in general, we are at a crossroads. And it's going to be up to us which path we take going into the digital age. Because laws are being made, as we see, and it's a new world in the courts and it's a new world in the law. And we need to decide how involved we're going to get. I think it's important. And I think we may not get this chance in the future to influence things.
Well, you have my full support. You have the support of quite a large community of people within the world of Bitcoin and crypto. And I think we will obviously all, everyone who's interested will keep fighting for you, and I won't ever stop talking to you. I'll be staying in touch with you as long as this goes on. Thank you again so much for your time. Please do give my best to Ross when you speak to him. Give it from me and the community, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you so much.
Okay, what did you make of that? I feel like in some ways it's a very similar interview to the first one, just a more desperate situation. The avenues available for the family are getting less. There really is only the clemency now. But what is really interesting is following people on Twitter who support Ross, the amount of people who do not believe he should spend the rest of his life in prison, who understand it is a waste of money, who understand he is no risk to the public. If he comes out of prison, he's not going to commit another crime. He's going to do something good for society. So what a waste it is for him to spend the rest of his life in prison. I do hope you enjoyed the interview. Again, if you have any questions, please do feel free to get in touch. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. And also, as I said in the intro, please do support the campaign. Please sign the petition, read about the case on freeross.org, follow on social media, and I encourage you to make other people aware of it and possibly share out this interview. Okay, I will share everything in the show notes. And yeah, if you have any questions, please get in touch.